of these boundary adjustments are contested to a high of about 3% in the last 5 years that are contested. What tends to be the main reason for these contested ones? And is there more of a problem than this 1.5 to 3% that we're seeing? I mean, if those are the contested ones, is there a lot that aren't contested that maybe there were problems but somehow it didn't get to the contested part? Or, I mean, I know we're going to be dealing with annexation. This isn't for you necessarily, but, you know, it looks like in 97 to 98% of the times the system appears to be working. So I'm wondering, is that 1.5 to 3% of contested, is that actually, should that be higher because a lot are resolved prior to being contested? Or
Mr. Chair, Representative, on the bar graph, the number that's in black, that represents the total number of proceedings that were either filed as contested proceedings or became contested because someone exercised the right to object. And the small number is the number that actually went to hearing. Some of those resolve themselves through the local directed meetings. Some of them resolve themselves through mediation. And some of them don't resolve themselves and need the hearing. But the statute, if a party or a city or a local unit of government file under 414.031, which is annexation by order, even if there isn't anyone to object to the proposed proceeding, by law that has to be determined after an administrative hearing. And we have had some hearings where there's a single party. By law, the contested proceedings have a year from the date of the first hearing in which to resolve themselves. So it allows for a process of potential negotiation, potential discovery. I really can't generalize it by size of petition either. We have some very contested cases for small acreages and some contested proceedings for large acres that resolve themselves quickly into the process. The administrative hearing part is like a little mini trial. So you have witnesses and sworn testimony, and you have a decision maker who's charged by law with making findings of fact, conclusions of law, and a decision. The uncontested proceedings are that way in part as well due to statutory structure. But a lot of things that we process in an uncontested status, because that's the way they are filed, actually do have controversy at the local level as well. We have many times where a petition could fit under several different sections of the statute, and at the discretion of the local unit of government or the petitioning party to decide which section of the statute to use. And sometimes they can make the choice to use a more procedurally efficient section of the statute, which might not allow for all of the input of the controversy at the local level to play itself out.
Mr. Chair, and thank you, and I think what you're saying is even in the uncontested ones, there still can be some controversy.
There can be.
Problems, and I appreciate that. And my last question here is, of those 38 contested ones that I'm looking at in the last 5 years, do they tend to focus on any certain geographical area of the state or involve any one big paramount reason why they're there? Is it scattered throughout the state?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative, it's scattered throughout the state, but in the sense that if you look at the state under any kind of analysis of transportation and growth corridors, it follows generally along those peripheral edges. Although as I'm sitting here today thinking of the contested files that are pending, we have one in the metro area, one in the Iron Range, one down in the southeastern part of the state, one in the east metro area.
Thank you.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you. The uncontestable versions that are done through statutory rules, do you believe that in the event that the residents were able to contest those, that that would dramatically increase the numbers of contested annexations that you'd have?
Ms. Sotillo.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't know if it would dramatically increase them. I think there would be a little bump, but I don't think you'd see quite an evening up of this bar graph.
Thank you.
Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, ma'am, two questions. Which side wins usually and generally and by a rough percentage if a city comes up against a township or township against a city in an annexation proceeding that's contested and they wrangle? Who usually wins? And then the next one is if the legislature does nothing at all, doesn't take any action statutorily or regulatorily, which side does that most favor, township or city?
Ms. Scotillo.
Mr. Chair, Representative, a little bit of historical context maybe for your question. The statute, as evidenced by all the titles and all the versions of the decision makers that have gone before, is municipal boundary adjustment. It was designed to facilitate city growth, to unify all of the disparate statutory laws and get them into one uniform system so that we had boundary changes that were judged against the same legislative criteria regardless of what part of the state they were in. Statutorily, and I haven't done these percentages in a while, but looking at just the contested proceedings, I would say that about 83% of those proceedings are resolved in favor of cities.
And then the other part of the question?
Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm sorry, the other part was if the legislature did nothing, what was the rest of your question?
Which side would it most favor, cities or townships, in this process if we did nothing? Would it just continue to be as it is, this same percentage? I mean, if we, of course, it depends on how we change it. But I guess the first question probably answered the second one. So.
Mr. Chair, Representative, if we do nothing and change, the statute will still reflect the amount of growth activity there is in the state.
Thank you. Ms. Scotillo, I've received emails from you for a number of years now. They're very good, brief, informative emails and don't require a response. You're very kind about that. I don't know if this question is fitting. We're about out of time, but I want to make it very briefly, just in case you have observed something, because from your position, you may or may not be able to observe this. But have you seen any indication that more orderly annexations are occurring due to the current situation in the law with regard to annexation by ordinance?
Mr. Chair, if you had asked me that question about 2 years ago, I might have said yes. But then recently, I was just commenting to my staff, it seems like the old days in which we're very busy with a pending contested agenda suddenly. So I don't know that there's any rhyme or reason, but you can see from the decision chart in your handout that annexations by ordinance and orderly annexation agreements account for the vast majority of the uncontested proceedings.
Ms. Scotillo, is there any indication that townships are accepting annexations and just deciding not to fight because they don't feel they have a real chance?
Mr. Chair, I think that's better directed to the township association. But I will say that communities are, I think, having a renewed interest in orderly annexation agreements as a planning tool to use for larger tracts of land for longer periods of time, and they do seem to see the benefit of the stability of that. But as I said, you can see from the bar graph, it's not necessarily the controversy that's dictating that trend, it's the growth in the state. So,
thank you, Ms. Scotillo. Last question, Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell me what percentage of these decisions there is no ability to appeal? And you talk about or contest. I mean, you talk about Representative Marquardt was talking about the low percentage to appeal, but it's my understanding that with at least the under 60 acres, there is no appeal process. And so maybe in order to ascertain what the true percentage of problem is, we might have to take out those numbers of one in which there is no recourse at all to even be heard.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't have that statistic right now, but we could pull them out because we do have a database that tracks by statutory section. So we could look at just annexations by ordinance, and it would take some doing because a lot of the statutory sections do, if there's an objection, you do this. If not, there's this. So it would take some hand-pulling to actually get you a good number on that.
But, Mr. Chair, do you have a feeling for what percentage of your annexation requests are using the under 60-acre provision?
Mr. Chair, the vast majority use the 60-acre or less provision.
Which are not contestable.
Which are not contestable. And that's one of the four subsections of ordinance annexations that are not contestable, and then the other two are.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Gutello. Appreciate your presentation and answering the questions. Next, we have Nancy Larson with the Minnesota Association of Small Cities for a presentation on the synopsis of interim activities, and Kent Sulin with the Minnesota Association of Townships. Welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thanks so much for having us here today. My name is Nancy Larson. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Small Cities, and I represent communities of under 5,000 throughout the state, both metro and rural, and of course most of them are rural, and annexation has been a big issue for us. I've been working on this issue since about 1993 or 94. And as you know, it's been very contentious in the past and had lots of arguments over some of these issues. Just want to have to say that the tone is much better this year. And thanks to people like Representative Anderson over there who really pushed to have us meet together and sit down together, the lobbyists from the various city and townships groups. We met throughout the spring, summer, and fall, ending up in mediation. We didn't come to a complete understanding, but I think we understand each other better, respect each other more, and I think those of you who have to deal with us will be happy because the level of rhetoric has declined and we're much kinder and gentler to each other. And I think that's important, and I think that's one of the goals that we had when we met, and I think that's a key in annexation, and is to have people communicate and talk to each other and learn what each other's concerns are. I think no matter what we do on the local level, we still have to do everything we can to make sure that people do sit down and discuss their issues together before there's a problem or even within within the problem, making sure that we can meet. We did not, as I said, come up with a bill that would take care of everything. We do have a bill that we hope takes care of some of the township concerns. We want to make sure everyone knows that that is not an answer for what they've been bringing forth. I just want to say, as far as mediation goes, it's very difficult. We're on opposite sides on these issues. They're very emotional. All the land use issues are, and we will probably have bills on both sides. They will probably go further out instead of further in, but we have to recognize that this is a negotiating process, and we hope you can help bring us closer together. And I'd like to say, thank you to Ken Solom with the townships and Carrie Thurlow with the cities. They've done a marvelous job of working together and to make sure that we continue to do that. Even as we go through the legislative process, we'll continue to work together also to try and come to some resolution. Thank you.
Any questions for Ms. Larson? Okay, Mr. Sulum.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kent Sulum. I'm an attorney with the Minnesota Association of Townships. We are the statewide organization representing the 1,790 townships throughout the state of Minnesota. I would echo what Ms. Larson said, that we got off to a bit of a rough start last spring, of course, in the process of the legislative mechanisms around here, each of us trying to get various bills introduced and hearings. And when it became apparent that neither the Senate nor the House were willing to hear any annexation bills, Representative Dempsey formed this work group committee that was referred to, and it started off with the city and township members being involved and legislative staff out of concern that the legislative staff was causing us to still put on our lobbyist hat rather than our negotiating hats. They slowly disappeared and left us one-on-one, and ultimately we did bring in the mediator to try to help, and is the handout that went around is the summary from that mediator that we hired. We exchanged, after some efforts, a list of discussion points that I'll go into more details on later in my township presentation. But the bottom line that came out is, while there were some housekeeping technical stuff I think we have some agreement on, we realized that the central issue, the main controversy over annexation, is a policy matter that there simply wasn't a lot of room for mediation on. It wasn't a case of, well, if you guys move a little bit this way, and we move a little bit this way, we've got it. We have a better understanding of each other's positions, but they are simply diametrically different philosophies of how annexation should work in the state, and that is why we are grateful that this committee and the Senate, when they are done with their bonding bill, will have us for these informational hearings, and any inputs that you can give us would be greatly appreciated, I'm sure, by both sides.
Thank you, Mr. Sulem. Any questions? Thank you very much. Next, we have a presentation from, on behalf of the cities, Kerry Thurlow with the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, and Craig Johnson from the League of Minnesota Cities. Welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record. Would you like to give the entire presentation from the two of you before you take questions? Would that be beneficial?
I think both of us would be willing to entertain questions, Mr. Chair, as they arise.
Thank you.
For the record, my name is Kerry Thurlow. I'm with the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, and with me is Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. I'm going to actually defer to my colleague to start, and I'm actually going to get my PowerPoint presentation up and running while he makes a few brief remarks first.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. And my opening remarks will be brief, but I will stay up here to help with a few sections of the presentation and to be available for questions. The League of Minnesota Cities has a position that is slightly different from some of the other city organizations on this issue, in that we don't see a crisis in annexation policy here. What we have seen, and we've looked at this very closely, and have seen some of the same statistics you're looking at today, is one of the most successful state programs that we're regularly involved with. Anytime you have something as controversial as the change of governance of property and potential regulations that go along with that, taxes, other things, and you see a process where 97 to 99% of the time it gets resolved without even going to a hearing, that's, in our mind, a very, very successful process that is preventing a huge backlog of administration, bureaucracy, and cost for the people involved. We do recognize that there are concerns from various parties. There always are. Anytime you're in a controversial negotiated setting like that, there are going to be people who feel like they did not get as good a deal as they wish they had, or did not have opportunities they wish they had. And we're certainly willing to discuss where those occur and if there actually is a flaw in the process. But from what we see in the regular application of this, it is not a system in crisis. It is a system that is working in a way that some people are not entirely comfortable with. So with that in mind, we've been working very hard with the other city groups and townships to discuss this. The League is not pushing a specific package of changes at this time, but what we do want to point out, and it will be reflected in the presentation that Ms. Thurlow will give, is that if the legislature is going to consider making changes to annexation, which is a very essential tool for local governments to negotiate out growth and development and plan it in their communities, that there are a list of concerns cities have that need to be addressed and should be a part of that settlement. It should not be a one-sided change to annexation law that suddenly benefits one party significantly over the other. I would also add, you know, just as a last remark, Mr. Chair, and in reference to a question that was asked just before the last presentation, with the annexation by ordinance provisions for 60 acres or less, it requires a voluntary property owner. So the reason that they are not appealed is because it had to be a voluntary action in the first place. The property owner had to come and ask the city to annex them for that 60-acre rule. And with that, I'll let Ms. Thurlow start the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Ms. Thurlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I said for the record, my name is Carrie Thurlow. I'm an attorney with Flaherty and Hood and represent the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities on Annexation Issues. As you heard Mr. Johnson iterate, some of the city groups take variations on the same theme with regard to the annexation issues. We all represent city groups. We all feel that annexation is an important tool to facilitate city growth. The Coalition is an organization of 73 cities in Greater Minnesota, and we tend to have a more aggressive approach to annexation. However, the Small Cities Association, the League of Minnesota Cities, and the Coalition have worked together to study the annexation process in Minnesota for over a year and have arrived at some conclusions and some recommendations that we all agree to. Let me first say that annexation does help facilitate city growth, and that growth in cities is, in fact, a good thing. It represents economic development and thriving communities in primarily in Greater Minnesota, which is where, by far, most of the annexations take place. And while the legislature did make many positive changes to the annexation laws in the 1990s, the current process, in our view, is still ineffective in some respects and should be reformed. The reason for that statement is that ineffective annexation policy undercuts the well-being of Minnesota and creates many problems for our communities. First, it impedes growth and economic development. As I said in my introductory remarks, annexation facilitates growth. Oftentimes, a reason for annexation is to accommodate new economic growth in a community. Commercial or industrial development or some new residential subdivisions want to come in and want to receive city services, and that a city must annex that property before they can extend city services. If the annexation procedures are slow or somehow too costly, that can turn away economic development, and we have seen examples of that in Greater Minnesota. Additionally, ineffective annexation policy weakens a local government's ability to provide efficiently provide services. What we see time and time again is that it is far more expensive to extend city services after a development has gone into a township than if the services are first extended before the development takes place. In these tough economic times, our cities are interested in providing services in an efficient and cost-effective manner, and annexation policy, good streamlined policy, helps facilitate that goal. Finally, ineffective annexation policy leads to poor land use decisions and the degradation of the environment. We've seen examples throughout our annexation study of water pollution that is occurring because of leaking septic systems. Now, I'm not saying that septic systems are bad in all instances, but in highly densely populated areas and in instances of urban development or in terrain where septic systems are not appropriate, that can lead to the degradation of the environment. And annexation policy can allow a city to, if it is streamlined, can allow a city to bring the property in, extend city sewer and water services, and prevent some of that environmental damage. As I said, the city, the Small Cities Association, the League of Minnesota Cities, and the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities conducted a survey over the last year or so regarding the annexation process. We started by emailing a survey regarding annexation to the CGMC and Small Cities membership in October of 2003. We received about 107 responses to the survey. We then followed up by interviewing city officials and employees to more specifically describe annexation experiences. And we talked about small and large cities, regional centers, both in the northern and southern parts of the state, to try to really get an idea of what people are experiencing. For the most part, cities reported that the current process is working pretty well. However, there were some significant problems that our cities identified. First, the current process, if the annexations are contested, imposes significant costs on local taxpayers. Now, I know that that the cost of the contested case process is of concern to townships, but it is of equal concern to cities, particularly smaller cities that may not have large budgets, may actually be dissuaded from bringing contested annexations that should be brought to address environmental concerns. They are simply dissuaded because they cannot afford the process. Additionally, the contested case process in some instances can generate controversy and divisiveness. We can talk about some specific examples, but by nature of the fact that there are contested annexations, it can lead to controversy over what, in our view, should be largely an administrative process of adjusting municipal boundaries. We also found that most cities have little or no ability to control urban sprawl in growth areas. Now, this is a problem that actually creates an additional concern with regard to annexations. We see that when urban sprawl or densely populated urban-type subdivisions occur in townships, not depending on city services, that those are the instances where contested cases are more likely in the future. Cities should have an ability to control their own destiny. They will be asked in the future to extend city services and should have greater control over controlling the land use and development in the, what is traditionally the growth areas. A third finding is that the role of Minnesota townships in some instances is not being enforced. Chapter 414, which contains the process for annexation procedures, also defines the role of cities and the role of townships. That policy statement, while I'm not going to read the entire statement, summarizes and basically says that urban development should occur in cities and that a rural level of services and rural type development should stay in townships. We see that because urban sprawl is occurring in some townships, sometimes up to 2 miles outside city limits, that the rural of townships is not being preserved as a rural type development, and that more should be done to preserve the nature and distinction of cities and townships. Finally, more can be done to train city and township officials in best annexation practices. This is something we saw in the study, but it was also something that we learned during the annexation discussions this summer that Nancy and Kent Sulem talked about previously. We talked about the need for cities and township officials to sit down and actually talk about their land use policies, talk about upcoming annexations, and the best way to approach that, and that much can be done to better train our officials to prevent some controversies before they begin. Based on those findings, the city groups are also making some recommendations for change. The first is that that we should streamline the annexation process more than it already is. This is in specific regard to the contested case process. We're specifically concerned with subdivisions occurring immediately outside city boundaries that are very obviously urban or suburban in nature, yet require a contested case before they can be resolved. These processes, we will be introducing a bill later in the session that would streamline the process to allow a city to make findings, update a comprehensive plan, and to annex those very obviously urban or suburban territories by ordinance. Secondly, we would urge the legislature to pass a bill that would clearly define the term urban or suburban. It is the key phrase that is needed to be decided in any contested annexation procedure. Currently, it is very vague, and because of that, it invites more controversy in the contested case process. If it were more clearly defined, I think you would have more certainty as to the outcome of the process. Third is to address existing financial and environmental problems and to prevent more problems from developing. We're specifically concerned with existing environmental problems where city services need to be extended to clean up environmental problems. Yet the city cannot afford a contested annexation and cannot afford to extend city services to clean up to clean up those problems. It is a paramount concern, and the legislature should look at ways of addressing those financial disincentives. Next is to allow cities to extend land use and zoning controls to nearby growth areas. under current law, cities can extend their land use and zoning controls up to 2 miles outside their boundaries if the county or the township does not already zone. Based on our survey, of the 107 cities that responded, only 13 cities have the ability to do so right now. We would urge the legislature to make this an automatic right of cities so that they can control their destiny and limit the development that occurs before land is annexed. Finally, we would urge the legislature to devote resources to best practices training. Both the League of Cities and the Minnesota Association of Townships have expressed interest in talking about best practices manuals. Any resources to get our cities and townships that are trained and talking would be helpful. You should all, in your packets, have received a summary of the findings and conclusions I just went over. Attached to the back of those packets should be some pictures with captions. I've included those pictures in the PowerPoint presentation, and I will briefly just talk about some of the problems, specific case examples that we found in our study. The first is captioned, "Bad Annexation Policy Hinders Economic Development." This is a picture outside of Marshall, Minnesota, and as you'll see from all the pictures, they're not terribly exciting because they're land that should be annexed. So it's not developed land at the present time. In this situation, this land is ripe for commercial industrial development. The city has received inquiries for development, but because of a lengthy or drawn-out annexation procedure and some resistance by the township, that development has not yet occurred. The next picture is a picture just outside the city of Moorhead. The caption is, "Annexation must accompany city services." When we talk to legislators, often our remark we hear is, well, why doesn't the city just extend city sewer and water services and have the township residents pay for those services to clean up the environment problems? This would be the example why. Many years ago, this is called Americana Estates, just outside the city of Moorhead. Many years ago, they were having septic system failures, and the MPCA ordered the extension of city water, sewer and water services to the development. The city did so without annexation, and while the residents did pay for the bonds necessary to extend the services, the incentive has now been removed for those residents to be annexed into the city. The city has now developed right outside or right up to the development. You really can't tell the difference between what is township and what is city. And those residents take advantage of services such as city parks, recreation, streets, and whatnot, but they don't pay the property taxes for those services. And there really isn't an incentive for those township residents to agree to annexation at this point. The next two pictures that you're going to see are both examples from Rochester. The first is that cities must have extraterritorial planning power. This is a subdivision that I believe has now been annexed into the city of Rochester, but was developed before annexation. As you can see, it was a very urban or suburban, and Rochester experienced many problems in the 1990s, having to devote over $22 million of its sales tax receipts to extend city sewer and water services to clean up leaking septics at a later time. Had they had planning control, they would have extended the services before the development had occurred. This is another development just outside the city of Rochester. It says some ex-urban development hinders economic growth. Actually, it would be more appropriately captioned that development in townships leads to tax disparity. Rochester estimates that about 60% of what's considered higher value homes in Olmsted County are placed in the township, not the city. And yet it's the city residents that pay the property taxes that the entire community enjoys. The next picture is a caption, "Land Use Controls Promote Smart Growth." This is a map of the airport of St. Cloud, excuse me. If you look closely, the trapezoids, I guess they are, A and B, represent where the flight patterns are in St. Cloud. Up at the top of the picture, you'll see some stars where they have the county and the township have allowed residential, relatively densely populated residential development to occur right in that flight pattern. That is impacting the ability of the St. Cloud Airport to grow and the city of St. Cloud to actually control and control its destiny of that airport.
Ms. Thurlow, to that picture there,
yes,
and this concern, a little bit close to home, I'm not fully familiar with all the details. I'm wondering which of the counties has not cooperated in preventing this growth?
Mr. Chair, you're correct. You're right. This airport does intersect, I believe, two counties, and there's one county that more strictly enforces the land use than the other. At the top of my head, I don't want to guess and guess the wrong county, so if you would allow me to get the answer to your question and at a later time and get back to you, I would.
Thank you. That'd be very helpful. I didn't want to say it was my county, so I asked the question. Thank you.
But you're right. The bottom half where there aren't stars, Mr. Chair, does reflect a county that is more strictly enforcing development controls than the other county.
Then I could probably safely guess. Thank you.
The next picture is captioned Annexation Promotes Environmental Protection. This is a picture of Springsteel Island near War Road, Minnesota. It's about 2 miles outside of War Road. War Road is a very small city up in the northern part, I believe, just a couple miles from the Canadian border. As you can see from the picture, and granted it's a little dark, it shows very closely clustered development on this particular island. It's all dependent on septic systems, and it has been estimated that 75% to 90% of those septic systems are failing, and failing right into Lake of the Woods. The city estimates it would be a multi-million dollar project to extend city sewer and water services, and the township is very much opposed to annexation. So the city, based on the cost of the annexation and the cost to extend services, has actually been dissuaded from doing anything about it. The next case is even simple annexations can be complex. This is a picture of, I believe it's Wilson Township, just outside of Winona. It's a property owner that has asked the city to try to annex his property. He wants to develop it. The township, it cannot be done so through annexation by ordinance procedures, but the township is opposed to annexation. It's currently pending, so it's too soon to tell, but while the property owner wants it and the city wants it, it seems like it's going to be a very contested annexation in the end. I believe this is the last picture, and it's street separates environmental standards. This is the city of Wyoming and Wyoming Township. I challenge any of you who, I know there might be a few people in the audience who might be familiar with this area, but I challenge any of you to guess which side is the township and which side is the city. The fact of the matter is, one side of the city is, or one side of the road is the township, one side is the city, but if you looked at it, you really wouldn't know. And as Craig will be able to tell you, cities have much stronger environmental regulations than townships, so truly, a street does separate the environmental regulations in the situation. That concludes my remarks. Certainly open to questions, or if Mr. Johnson has any follow-up.
Thank you, Ms. Thurlow and Mr. Johnson. And before we go to that, if I may, Ms. Thurlow, I'd like to add to my question, while it's in mind, is if you could also find out what, if any, kind of, what, if any, level of communication occurred between the city and the county with regard to preventing this growth from being in the area that will most likely cause some problems in the future. That would be helpful as well.
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to do so. I will note that the St. Cloud area, Met area, there are many cities around St. Cloud right now. I will add that they, with their townships, actually have pretty good intergovernmental control, communication and meetings. So I'll be happy to find that out to see if the counties have been involved.
Thank you. Question, Ms. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a laundry list of questions as we are going through your presentation, and you talked about services. Does current annexation laws require cities to provide services to the annexed land that they go into? I mean, I'm concerned about that, those services when it comes to annexing, especially coming from the Monticello area where you're looking at 7,000 acres.
Ms. Thurlow.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I believe that there is no explicit requirement that the property be served. However, in our study, the majority of the orderly annexation agreements, and I believe included in that is the recent orderly annexation agreement between Monticello and Monticello Township. I'd be happy to get you a summary of that. Does include a service provision plan. Also, I believe, and perhaps it would be better for me to defer to Ms. Cotillo, I believe that the ability to provide services is a factor for an administrative law judge in deciding an annexation dispute.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Cotillo, you talked about costs and trying to reduce costs, but if a city petitions to have an annexation go through, why is it always the townships have to pay half the cost?
Ms. Thurlow.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson.
Especially if they didn't want to go into it to begin with.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Thurlow.
The annexation, contested annexation process is a trial-type proceeding modeled after other types of trial-type proceedings where both sides pay their have the decision to pay their legal bills. Now, I think we can talk about, and I'd be happy to talk with you, the idea of talking about ways to prevent both unfounded petitions for annexation as well as unfounded opposition to annexation by talking about award of attorney fees or whatnot, but I think it cuts both ways. Both there are situations of unfounded opposition as well as perhaps sometimes townships may feel that there are unfounded petitions for annexation.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But isn't it true that under present annexation laws that if a township through negotiation finds itself in a situation where they are going to have to go into mediation, and from my understanding and from results of past situation contested hearings, that 9 times out of 10, if not almost always, the township ends up losing the situation, losing the contested hearing? Aren't they always under that threat? Seems like it's the way the law is situated now.
Ms. Thurlow.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, the percentage that Ms. Cotillo quoted you, I believe, was 87%, and I have no reason to doubt that that's not true. Not knowing all the cases that looks at, I would dare guess that it would be a generalization to assume that it's somehow unfairly weighted towards cities. The fact, if cities are winning 87% of the time, I would offer that perhaps cities have a very good record and rationale for that annexation in the first place, and that they are actually petitioning and the petition is well-founded. The process, as Ms. Cotillo stated, is designed to facilitate municipal boundary adjustments and to facilitate urban growth. So if the growth is occurring and it's found to have an urban or suburban or about to become so type development, that annexation should occur. And perhaps in many instances it would be best to resolve those situations by orderly annexation agreement because the situation is developing as the case is being filed.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Anderson,
regarding orderly annexation, you get situations like in the Wyoming situation, Wyoming Township situation, the Winona situation, where you see people wanting to come forward with petitioning for annexation, but they're not even close. They may be a mile, maybe they're more than a mile away from being in the city, close to the city boundaries to be annexed in. And yet we use the string type of attachment of a road that would go to that piece of property to then say, well, we'll just go out and then we'll take that piece of property and it'll be city. Now you have township inside and you have annexed pieces of property like that. Does that make any sense at all?
Ms. Thurlow.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I agree that it's probably not, that having boundaries such as those are probably not an ideal situation. However, in many situations where that occurs, we have a property owner that has the land that is directly adjacent to the city and for whatever reason chooses to hang on to that land in township, perhaps until there, as the development occurs around them, the land value would go up. It's actually creating an incentive to delay annexation closest to the boundaries right now. Our response to that situation would allow for annexation of the intervening property as well. And I'm certain that there would be township opposition to that proposal. But yes, we would encourage development from the inside out and from the boundaries out as much as possible. The reality is that just doesn't happen in all situations.
Mr. Chair.
Excuse me, Representative Anderson, I need to ask that you try to bring it to a close. We have four more.
My last question.
And I do have to make sure that townships have equal.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Thurlow, would the cities be opposed to allowing amendment to go into law that the ALJ has to consider citizens of the area to be annexed as part of the judgment as far as having them testify at a contested hearing? Would the cities be willing to allow that to be in law, that citizens of the area that's going to be annexed have the right to come before the hearing judge and have their day in court?
Ms. Thurlow.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I have to apologize. I'm not sure I fully understand the question. If you're just asking if there's a day to allow citizen concerns to be aired, I believe the current contested case process allows many instances of that. There's a voluntary meeting requirement. There's then the mediation administrative, the alternative dispute resolution time where there's mediation. In many contested cases, including a very recent one that went before an administrative law judge, they did set aside a time for a citizen, for an open meeting of citizen concerns, and I believe that in that situation, the township residents did get a chance to be heard.
I guess the question is the judge has to take, excuse me, Mr. Chair, the judge has to take into consideration the opinions of the citizens as part of his overall judgment on the case.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, to the city perspective would amount to an annexation election. We would be opposed to proposals such as that.
Thank you.
Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, this is probably more of a comment than a question, but as a longtime township resident, your testimony scared me. And the reason I'm saying that, I think the deck is already stacked in favor of the cities, and that if you got your wishes by this presentation that I've seen, it would look like it would turn into a machine to just roll over them. It's kind of strong language, but I listened intently to the testimony and the things that you suggested are required, and your assumption that it's working properly. Well, a lot of things work properly, but in a terribly wrong direction. I mean, it could be going very smoothly, but it doesn't mean that it's good for the townships. And it seemed like an attitude in your testimony towards the townships is the city being the parent to the township and knowing better than the township. Townships are goofing up the way they're subdividing. They're getting in the way of progress, and we need to straighten them out. And with our good advice, and that's simplifying it too much, but as a person that got a map and looked for the furthest place I could get from the city and built there, that's probably where some of this is coming from. And living in the long end of a township road where nobody drives by is my quest in life. But it's a tough spot for a politician to be in, truthful, because I got 18 cities and I got 40-some townships. And, you know, with this, it seems like there's no simple solution. But the obvious look that this gives me after hearing your testimony and the way it sits right now is the townships are definitely on the defensive, and the cities are in kind of a bully pulpit here and asking for more
I wish there was some way to come to a simple resolution for this for both sides, because they're going to be expecting this out of me when I get back into my constituent area. And it's a tough one right now, but it just, the system looks loaded right now on one side, and just because it's working properly doesn't mean that's good.
Mr. Johnson, and we do need to be as brief as possible. I'm committed to
get that. I very much appreciate that, and I'll just take a shot at a couple of points of the previous comment. I'm sure it does appear that way. These are the opinions of what would have to change to keep a balanced picture on annexation if other changes were made as well. And so you're seeing one end of it. You'll see the other side of that next. I think you'll see that that will be every bit, if not more so, leaning towards changing the balance of power in the other direction. So, yes, you are in a very difficult position on this. But let me give you an idea of where some of my cities are at right now, where if we see the change in the balance of how annexations are done so that land use decisions become more and more difficult and growth through annexation becomes more and more difficult, it only exacerbates the problem we already have of unintended incentives for growth to occur outside of municipal borders. Right now, environmental regulations, an area that I follow very closely, are a perfect example of that. If you live in a city, anywhere in the state of over 10,000 people, you will, within the next year, your city will be under the new federal stormwater requirements. Very expensive, sweeping requirements to start regulating stormwater like wastewater in the long term. It's going to cost your city millions to meet that. The townships do not have that requirement and will not be required to have that permit unless they have a population of over 10,000, regardless of what types of development they're doing and regardless of whether it's across the street from the city that has that requirement. Wastewater requirements are the same. Cities are being required to add phosphorus treatment to their wastewater systems. Cities are being required to add ammonia treatment to their wastewater systems, upgrade their systems. The impaired waters program that's coming is going to have sweeping impacts on wastewater treatment systems. It is not going to have new requirements for the townships unless they choose to put some in place themselves. So what we have is a number of factors that are already pushing developers to say, you know what, when I have to put in this big stormwater system and the city's adding all these utility bills onto the development costs because of infrastructure improvements they're going to have to make to add services here, I think maybe we'll go to the township to build, and now there's the risk that we're going to add. Besides that, it might be nearly impossible for us to get annexed into the city. So we might as well just have some bigger lots, lose some money on lot size, and hope we get out of enough environmental regulations to make up the difference. There's a very careful balance in place right now that's in danger of swinging on its own, regardless of whether the legislature acts on annexation this year.
Mr. Johnson, I just had a funny thought. Is it possible we should be having townships annexed back into their jurisdiction from the city to bypass that federal regulation?
Just Mr. Chair, that's an interesting opportunity, and I guess the EPA would quickly sniff it out. But
hopefully we don't get this tape. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Thurlow and Mr. Johnson, thank you for your presentation. This whole discussion of sprawl and land use and environmental issues is important for me as I sort through this issue. I just had a question about your recommended changes number four. At least in the metro area, we have the Metropolitan Land Planning Act, and I'm wondering, it's not enforced by the Met Council, and I think the Met Council is very inconsistent in terms of its own, application of their different land planning laws, densities, etc. But how would this proposal either complement or relate to existing statutes in terms of the Land Planning Act and presumably tools that the city and the Met Council would have in addressing density and sprawl and growth?
Excuse me.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Thurlow.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hornstein, I've not talked with Mr. Johnson about how this would impact the metro cities. Our proposal is focusing on the cities outside the Southern County metropolitan area that are not impacted by the Met Council and the Land Planning Act. There currently isn't such a thing in Greater Minnesota, and we're seeing wide variations of controls, from the very good controls by some counties and townships to the not-so-good controls in some counties and townships. And this would place primary planning authority up to 2 miles outside of city boundaries with the cities. The rest of the planning and control would remain with townships and counties.
This is very quick.
It does need to be very quick. We're about out of time. We have two more people.
Well, just a comment as we work through this. I mean, there are some significant annexations taking place within the metro area, and I think it'd be important to, you know, address those as well.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two quick questions. Number one, in an annexation dispute involving a small amount of land, where you've got the interests of the landowner in the city as being different than the interests of adjacent property owners and township residents, what recourse or what remedy do the townships and the adjacent landowners have?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, if it's 60 acres or less and the parcel of land is adjacent to the city, the property owner has petitioned the city, there would not be recourse to the adjacent landowners. Now, if it's a small parcel, it doesn't meet those 60 acres or less or is not adjacent, such as the example of Winona that we're talking about, the recourse is a contested case, which Wilson Township has opposed annexation, and that's the result, is a contested case.
So the answer is they have nothing.
Mr. Chair, one addition to that answer is, unless the development is of a sort that may have significant impacts, so lighting, traffic, sound, dust, then there's an entire environmental review process that would have to go through before any development of that sort could occur there.
Okay, then final question, Mr.
Representative Groff,
thank you. Would you be opposed to any stiffening of the adjacency requirements for property? For example, Representative Anderson brought up the example of using a road to link a city to a property. This is a particular concern in my district where it's suburban and rural, lots of townships. Do you have any positions on that? And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, I think you and I are going to have a difference of opinion, and I don't think it's going to be of a surprise when I tell you that we would be opposed to stiffening. In fact, we would advocate doing the exact opposite. There are examples where property owners have wanted to come into the city. For example, up in War Road, there's a development called War Road Estates. About 90% of the septics up in that area are failing, and the property owners want to come into the city, but because it's not adjacent, they can't petition. Because the town board is opposed to any annexation, they can't come in, and the city has no recourse because they can't afford a contested case. So we would actually advocate for loosening the adjacency requirements.
Representative Hilbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know we're running out of time. To Representative Cornish, I'm a former city council member, and their testimony scares me, so I'm township people. I guess, you know, in your testimony, I get this impression that you think that that the cities are the end-all, and there's a situation that I'm very aware of in which a city, through a patchwork quilt design, did a number of under 60-acre annexations to the point that their wastewater treatment facility couldn't handle it. They got major fines from state agencies, have caused very negative effects on the surrounding townships, communities, counties. I'm getting to the point here. You talk in your recommendations that the state should be able to put up money to pay for costs for problems. I'm about to the point where I'm getting sick of people coming to the state wanting money for infrastructure improvements because of bad planning and irresponsible use. And maybe these entities that are doing this bad planning and putting overloading systems and not putting controls in, maybe these communities should be responsible for the failures to protect the environment that they're responsible for and not be coming to the state all the time asking us to bail them out.
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chair, and in the interest of not going in depth into this, I would be glad to talk with Representative Holberg more about my positions on this and anyone else who wants to. But the short answer is these decisions are not all being made by the local unit of government. The state is increasing its environmental requirements almost on a monthly basis. If we want to continue to drive the cost of providing those sorts of services, proper wastewater treatment and stormwater management, up and up and up and up to the point where it is no longer feasible to build and develop within a city, and what people do instead is buy up the ag land and parcel it out, that we can do that easily. All we have to do is put the entire burden of that on the local ratepayers, and that will happen. I don't think that any of us are really trying to do that. So this is a different way of trying to look at that. And there are a number of other issues connected to this session that I'm sure you've heard about.
Mr. Chair, the situation I'm talking about is that you had a city that created this problem, a city that kept adding home upon home upon home, chunk upon chunk, expanding their empire, if you will, and didn't have the ability or the amount of... The wastewater treatment plant wasn't large enough to handle these falls, and they had a lot of environmental degradation, and then they were looking for regional or state resources to bail them out from the problem that they created. And this is a city. This wasn't a township.
Mr. Chair, then we do need to cut this off.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, and I'm happy to come and chat with you at any time about this. I want to make very clear that cities are by no means perfect, that yes, there are examples where better planning could take place. The basic premise of our presentation, however, though, is that there are different roles for cities and townships, and that townships are designed for a rural way of life, and that when development becomes urban in nature, that it's best served by the city. I think the example also is that 60 acres at a time is not the best way to do land use planning, and we need to develop procedures that facilitate more long-term views.
Thank you, Ms. Thurlow. Mr. Johnson, members, for your questions. And begging the pardon of the Township Association, we have indulged a bit of time here. I'm not normally tolerant, so due to the contentiousness of this issue, I've done so today. Kent Sulem from the Minnesota Association of Townships, Mike Curry, if I have that correct, and Robert Rupi will all come forward, state your name for the record. And members, you've noted, we all know this is a very contentious issue. It can be a very difficult issue. And a lot of members, I'm glad to hear there's some members here that have both townships and cities in their districts, because that forces us to look at both sides of the issue. And I have a few other comments we'll close with. And Mr. Sulem, I assure you that if I'm basically bringing this up because I'd like members to indulge if we can go a little late and give them our greatest of attention. If not, Mr. Sulem, we will have you back again to make up for the lost time. And I also have another idea I'll submit right at the end here. Mr. Sulem, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, for the record, my name is Kent Sulem with the Minnesota Association of Townships. If I may just clarify, so I can kind of gauge the things we want to definitely hit on today, approximately what time are we looking at for an adjournment?
2:15, Mr. Sulem.
2:15.
Mr. Sulem, it's not my intent that you cut this short. Let me identify this while I have everyone here pretty much. An idea that comes to me because of the difficulty of this issue is in the line of questions, we're getting specific cases brought up. And I'm just going to throw this out. If there's good response to it from the presenters as well as members and vice versa, an idea that I have would be for members to submit questions to Mary Cummins, our committee administrator, regarding specific cases. And we'll have both the Township Association representative and the City Association, League of City representatives, come forward, and we'll submit those questions to them ahead of time so they can be prepared, and we'll hear both their sides on these particular cases. And so that we can better sort things out on a case-by-case basis and see if we can learn some of the ins and outs and the rights and the wrongs on these case-by-case situations. If members like that as an idea, I'm just going to suggest that now while we're all here, and I'll gauge what we do by the questions we get here, and you can comment to me on that later. No further ado, Mr. Sulem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe everybody now has a copy of our handout, and that's what we'll be working from. Obviously, we put the cover page on there when it was still a joint session, but we are very grateful to this committee for being willing to accommodate us this afternoon. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the Township Government 101, which is the first page of the handout. That actually came as a specific request out of the Senate, where a number of the members are far less familiar with township government than many of you appear to be, and I know even with the number of newcomers, many of you have expressed as we're coming around to your office that you either live in a township or were raised in a township and are aware of it. But I do want to touch briefly on it that from this perspective, and that is we do have a disagreement with the cities as to what is the role of township. There is a statement in the preamble to 414 that talks about rural versus urban development, and we'll touch on that in a little more detail in a few minutes. But if you look through this handout, you'll see that townships are a valid form of government that have many, if not most, of the same authorities, requirements, etc., as cities. And that the primary difference in terms of townships is the annual township meeting, which is rapidly approaching the second Tuesday of March, where the citizenry have the chance to have a lot more input directly as to what direction that community is going to be taking in terms of the authority of the town board to act on their own in terms of how the budgets are set. At the township level, as most of you are aware, levies are set by the people. The town board provides the information, budgets are discussed, but the citizens decide how much they are willing to be taxed. And that is something that is unique. Township is the oldest form of government in the United States. And so it's very important as we're talking about annexation to recognize that you are talking about a valid form of government, and that what happens a lot of times with annexations is exactly as Representative Cornish described. We're viewed as the little child that should just be quiet and speak only when spoken to, and it ignores the validity of township as a form of government that has some very unique features to it that would be a shame to lose, not only in the state of Minnesota, but across the country. Turning into our overview, obviously from what you've already heard today, annexation is definitely a very controversial yet important issue. I think it's important to note that the Township Association and our associate organization, the Local Government Alliance, has never asked for an absolute ban to annexation. We have no intent to ask for an absolute ban to annexation. We are fully in recognition that there are times it makes perfect sense. If you would indulge me and look in the middle of page one of the outline, which is the white section of the handout, you'll see our legislative policy, which simply states, to ensure fairness in all annexation proceedings by restoring a balance of power between townships and cities, reducing the cost of contested case proceedings, and ensuring proper planning and encouraging cooperative efforts between cities and townships. I think it is accurate to say that any reform efforts that the townships are going to be supportive of will probably be viewed as the cities giving up more power than the townships are giving up. And that's part of the problem we had with the mediation. The reason for that is to assume that you can have a change that is equally balanced in terms of the amount of change assumes that we're starting in the middle as to where the level of power is. And that, unfortunately, is simply not the case. Right now, we believe the power is so shifted in favor of the cities, and that's not to say that prior to the amendments they pushed in the 90s, there wasn't necessarily a power shift the other way. But the reality is the cities have so much control at this point over the annexation process in terms of how it really works that in order to get that process back to the middle, it's going to appear that the modifications are far more pro-township. So what I encourage you to look at is as we talk about proposals, as we look at this throughout the session, look at what we're trying to accomplish at the end product. Not the changes being made, but what is the end product of those changes. And I think you'll see that what we are really striving at is trying to restore a process that is balanced. But because it's so out of line right now, it is going to appear that there is much more of a pro-township shift just to restore that line of balance. Section 2 of the paper is where I've asked Mike Corey and Bob Rupi to join me. They are two attorneys that have represented numerous townships over the years, probably the vast majority of townships that have been involved in annexation proceedings have been represented at one time or another by Mr. Corey's law firm. And so he is here to be able to offer you some of the specific examples of what we're talking about. And much as the city's talked about, there is no one size fits all. Can I tell you that one single problem applies to every single annexation that has occurred? Absolutely not. But it is an indication of the loopholes that exist in the current statutes, the way that some statutes have been abused. What we've seen is that we'll point out an area of abuse, and so the cities will stop using that area of abuse, even though it's still there. But the point that we want to raise here is that when we're looking at a reform package, we're trying to be comprehensive, because if you leave any loophole out there, I guarantee you that the legal representatives for the cities will find it and will exploit it to the fullest extent possible. And as an attorney, I tell you, it probably would be malpractice for them not to do so, because you have to be that zealous advocate for your client. And so what we're hoping to find here is a resolution that closes all of the potential abuses, understanding that unintended consequences may force us to constantly look at is there one little area that was overlooked. But that is the goal of the townships. If you look in the light yellow in the back of the handout, you'll see a report that we commissioned from a planner. And what our instructions were to the planner was to look at the annexation files, look at the 1991 city report, which has now been updated, and give us a neutral analysis as to whether or not the changes that occurred in the 1990s actually addressed the specific concerns that the cities had raised. Tell us if, from a planning perspective, they thought that the problems raised by the cities were actually true problems, and then to give us some guidance as to the approach, not specific recommendations, not a legislative bill, but concepts that we should be thinking about in terms of making changes. And what we found was that much of the recommendations that came back from that planner's report mirrored the efforts that we left off with that were initiated by this chamber. It was the House of Representatives that told us a year ago to put away the past major changes that we've been recommending and focus on a new approach that focuses more on advanced planning and cooperative efforts. You'll see on pages 1 and 2 of that report a chronology of the key legislation. And the only one I'm going to highlight here were the major changes in 1992 that did away with the right to vote of township residents and led to the creation of the current procedures. And the only reason I flag that is that it's very easy to try to portray that as saying this was legislative policy, but the truth of the matter is that policy was rejected 3 different times between the House and the Senate and only became law because of an amendment in a tax bill in the waning hours of session. And so it's just important that when you're looking at what has past policy been, the changes that were adopted were actually rejected policy by both chambers. And should not be viewed as having been universally accepted at that point. With that, I'll turn back to page 2 of the white handout, section 2, the problems that townships have with the current law. One of the things that's interesting is contested case is obviously the most controversial, and you've already heard testimony today that contested case only makes up about 2, maybe 3% of the filings. But when we went back and looked at numbers provided by the Office of Boundary Adjustments, we discovered that in terms of the number of acres of land actually involved, from the 5.5-year period between July 1st, 1998 and January 31st, 2004, there were at that time 16 contested case proceedings filed, equaling 54,639 acres of township property to be annexed into the city. At the same time, there were 817 orderly annexations totaling 54,652 acres, a 13 acres despite hundreds of filings difference. What that shows is that even though it may represent a very small percentage of the filings, contested case annexation is a major, major problem for townships and affects a tremendous amount of property. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Corey to walk through the specific problems that we have with the contested case process.
Mr. Corey, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Michael Corey. I am with the law firm of Corey, MacArthur, and Rupi, and we are also here today on behalf of the Local Government Alliance, a group of townships interested in annexation laws. To my right is Mr. Robert Rupi, also with Corey, MacArthur, and Rupi. Welcome. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, if I may... what Mr. Sulem had just pointed out here in terms of the figures, the acreage figures, I think really bears on the heart of the problem here. We have 817 orderly annexation agreements. That is where the city and the township have agreed on 817 occasions as to what property should be annexed under what terms at what time. This is by far the preferred method of annexation. That accounts for 54,000 some acres. We have 16 cities which have passed unilateral resolutions, filed those with the Municipal Boundary Adjustments Office for about the same number of acreage. As I see it, that is 817 well-thought-out negotiated agreements bear the same weight as 16 unilateral city actions. There is something wrong with the statute when we equate those two numbers. They simply shouldn't be equated in that manner. We should have a statute which, by far and away, has the bulk of the annexations, if not all of them, in a manner that can be negotiated between the cities and townships. What we're looking at, then, is a way to say, what are our problems with contested case, and do we need contested case? Could the legislature devise a better method which keeps these decisions at the local level, not at the administrative law judge level? In pursuing what is wrong with the contested case proceedings, in addition to those raw number of acreage, if you look at the percentage of acres filed, annexation petitions filed, and we went through, again, that same reporting period, July 1, 1998, to January 31, 2004, the townships agreed to about 28% of the acres filed. The cities, unilaterally or in conjunction with the property owner, but again without the township's agreement, filed 72% of the acres. So you've got a situation currently when the cities believe there is nothing wrong with the process. I understand their point of view. They are approving 100% of the petitions that get filed. The townships are approving 28% of the petitions that are filed. I think that gives you an idea of the township's perspective where we see a problem with the current law. There needs to be more involvement at the township level, again, to keep this as a local government issue, one that's decided at the local level rather than at the state level.
Mr. Chair, sorry to interrupt, but I just want to point out the reason that we are using this time period and the chart numbers that we are reporting is that is a report that was requested by members of this chamber that were part of the annexation work group, and therefore it's numbers that had been shared with that annexation work group going back to last April, and so we just wanted to use numbers that have been available to everybody at this point. So that's why we're looking at that time frame.
Thank you, Mr. Kurtz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The costs that Mr. Sulem had discussed are very real costs that are actually incurred. You'll notice several figures in the report. When we represent a township which is faced with a contested case filing filed by a city, we estimate to them, if you want to contest this case and contest it with a chance of winning or to try to win this case, you should figure $125,000 to $175,000. In that figure is approximately $25,000 to pay the judge, the administrative law judge. The city would pay the judge about the same amount. We're estimating the administrative law judge's fees are about $50,000, and that came from one of the administrative law judges in one case that did not go to trial. But we asked him to estimate the costs, and the judge at that point said about $50,000. We'll find out in the Wyoming case very soon. That case just went to trial. Decision is supposed to be issued today, and we will probably within a couple weeks know what the judge's costs are. But again, those are costs borne by the township, which are not budgeted, really cannot be anticipated. They must react to a city filing. In addition to the cost issue for the townships, there is, as Ms. Thurlow pointed out, a cost issue for the cities. And I have had one mayor in one town that we are still negotiating with, so I'd appreciate if I can keep it unnamed, where the city and the township reached a tentative agreement on an orderly annexation agreement. And afterwards, the mayor had told me that if we were not going to reach an agreement, the city was going to file an annexation petition for approximately half of the township. Now, this is an outstate city that is experiencing very little growth. And I said, you can't possibly grow into that many acres. Why would you be filing that much? And the response was, we're going to be in front of an administrative law judge. The judge is going to split the difference anyway. It doesn't cost that much more to go for the whole thing than to go for a small amount. So I might as well file as big as I can, and as long as I'm going to incur that cost, get as much land out of the deal as I can. And that, I believe, is one of the core problems we have. The incentive is for the cities to shoot big. And you've noticed that in Monticello, which I think was about 15 square miles. The Chisago City annexation petition was originally 17 square miles, and I think the city of Chisago is about between 2 and 3 square miles of land, although I could be wrong on that. But the annexation area was several times the size of the city. Now, they did scale that back to only 10 square miles, but we're still looking at a 10-square-mile annexation that goes in front of the judge. There simply is no incentive here for the cities to work with the townships and the landowners to try and get an annexation, if you will, or access the property that makes some sense. On the landowner issue, which is another problem here, I think it was Representative Anderson who had addressed the issue of the landowners having a say in this. Under the current statute, when we go to a hearing in front of the administrative law judge, there are 14 statutory components that the judge looks at. None of those refer to or in any way incorporate the desires of the residents, and we believe that is a problem. And in fact, when we were at the Wyoming trial, which occurred this last November, the judge did hold a public testimonial, if you will, where the public can testify on the record. However, prior to that, when we were discussing whether the judge would allow that, the attorney for the city of Chisago, who is Mr. Chris Hood, he is the principal in the law firm of Flaherty and Hood, that's Ms. Thurlow's law firm, he had argued to the judge that the testimony of the residents, and this is on the record and I can certainly supply a copy of it, the testimony of the residents would be incompetent, irrelevant, and immaterial, and further argued that under the rules, the testimony shall be excluded. Now, thankfully, the judge did not exclude the testimony and took the testimony. We don't know to what effect the judge will apply the testimony because there's nothing in the statute that guides the judge. So the judge can't say, these residents believe it's not in their best interest, therefore I'm not going to allow the annexation. That is one of the problems. So when we get to these hearings, we have the township spending a lot of money, and we have to tell the residents, you might be able to speak, you might not, but your opinions don't factor into the statute. They often ask, why can't this be resolved at the local level? The statute doesn't allow it. What I think Mr. Sewell will talk about here in a moment, and I think I will leave the rest of the presentation here in the interest of time, is a process whereby the legislature sets parameters that are not going to be hard and fast for any one city, but would instead be a formula that would adjust or allow, if you will, a particular city to plug its numbers into this formula and determine how much land it needs. Now, once we know the land that's going to be annexed, we're not going to fight over whether this is 10 square miles, 15 square miles, or half a square mile. If you, the legislature, can set the number of acres that are going to be annexed and then require the city and the township to sit down and figure out with the landowners what's the best land to annex, I think we're going to keep that decision at the local level, and I think we're going to avoid all the controversy that we have here. And I think from that, I'll turn it back to Mr. Sewell for discussion.
Mr. Sewell?
Mr. Chair? What Mr. Curry was referring to is Section 3 of our paper, which starts talking about our township positions on various proposals that have been placed on the table, both during the past summer's work group efforts and also past legislative session bills that have been there. I do want to just touch a couple of wrap-ups on the problems, however. Mr. Corey's alluded to them, and others have in their questions. Some additional problems that we have that will be solved by trying to go towards a solution that is based on joint planning efforts, identifying growth areas, and promoting cooperative efforts, is even if you assume you can get to that contested case process, we've had a couple of situations with the ALJs. The most recent one, the ALJ actually made a finding that the city's petition did not satisfy, I believe, any of the 14 criteria. Specifically found that this property to be annexed, which was 12.5 square miles, once not, would never be urban or suburban in nature, and yet still found it to be in the best interests of the citizens and ordered the annexation. Now, I will openly admit in that particular situation there were some very unique factors. The concern is, what it points out is the ALJs are not finding themselves bound to the current requirements of the statutes. They'll actually find that the property isn't urban, isn't developing, will never develop, and still ordering the annexations. Just because in that situation there were some unique circumstances, doesn't mean that they won't do it again. In another situation that some of you are familiar with out in Forest Lake, the ALJ attempted to order a number of things that simply were not allowed by statute, ended up in a protracted lawsuit on the matter and additional hearings here at the Capitol. And so what we're finding is that simply relying on contested case is not a mechanism that offers very favorable results to most of the parties involved other than the city. We've also had some situations for the Boone and Fingers that were already discussed, so I won't go into a lot of discussion there. That's why our list of legislative proposals and our positions on them is based on 11 core concepts that the work group agreed to work from. After putting everything on the table, we found 11 bullet points that we felt were the highlights for things. And the first was the development issues dealing with urban versus rural. And as you heard Ms. Thurlow testify, they think that that is a critical aspect. Since April, we have asked the cities for their definition of urban versus rural. And until the last day of our mediation, we did not receive any. And on that day, we received one that virtually would mean if anybody builds anything in a township, that makes it urban, and therefore the city gets to take it, regardless of the ability to provide service or the type of development there. I'll be very honest, the townships do not feel that it's worth the time of this body to start arguing over definitions, because the real issue is what are the needed services. I think a couple of examples of that are an ethanol plant is clearly going to be viewed as a commercial industrial use, and yet I'm sure most of your colleagues around the city of St. Paul would say it's not a good idea to build one in downtown again. It's something that probably belongs in the rural areas where it is less of an impact on that densely developed corridor. Another situation is that we had a recent annexation petition that annexed about 47 acres of wetland. Clearly that wetland cannot be developed. It will not be developed. And the question was, why are they annexing the wetland? Well, the answer was they wanted the farm implement dealer that was on the other side of that wetland and needed to get the point of abutment. You tell me what is urban about a farm implement dealer. If that is not serving the rural members that are the primary users of those farm implements, it gets to be a real dicey area trying to make artificial distinction in urban and rural when the real issue is what are the services, what are the needs to accommodate any type of use, regardless of how you want to classify it. Because of that, the townships have shifted their efforts towards trying to create a cooperative planning process. As Mr. Corey said, our offers to the cities have been to try to identify how do we define a growth area, subject that growth area to a joint planning board, which is currently the procedure used by orderly annexation agreements, so that you don't have one side or the other making unilateral decisions for that potential growth area, and then within that growth area providing for a streamlined annexation when the property owners and the cities are both ready for that annexation to occur. What it does is remove the contested case threat. It requires the two sides to sit down together, analyze what is happening in this region. Another unique aspect of townships when it comes to planning and zoning is we are required by statute to be consistent with or more restrictive than the county. Cities are allowed to do whatever they want to do. In other words, we have to work within a centralized framework. We can't decide to buck the rest of the region. We have to go with where the counties are headed. We have to work in that cooperative framework already. And what we're saying is in these areas where the towns and cities are meeting, it makes sense to have as much input as possible to determine what is really the desired development, if any, in that region. Is it going to be an ag development? Is it going to be a housing development? Is it going to be an industrial commercial park? What is it going to be, and how can we best facilitate that type of development in this region? Environmental issues are a very legitimate concern. We have again offered to the cities that if there are specific environmental statutes that they think are unfairly pro-township, anti-city, to provide us that list, and we'll try to work with them in figuring out what are possible solutions. But that again, as a single issue, it should not decide annexation factors. As Representative Holbrook pointed out, the cities have no problem coming here seeking massive bonding bills to upgrade or retrofit their wastewater treatment plants for which they had no long-term infrastructure planning and on which they are happily to annex our property regardless of whether or not they can actually extend services. Is every city doing that? Absolutely not. But the process does not distinguish between them. Every city, even if they don't have municipal services, has the authority to annex. And we think what's happening is, quite frankly, the fact that the legislature is finally realizing there's problems with the current law. There's currently an incentive for cities to be grabbing while the grabbing is good. And that's why we're seeing an increase in the number of filings that are occurring, because they realize that they may actually have to be accountable in the future and may actually have to do real planning and not just say it's good because the city says so. Property owner rights is always a dicey area. Obviously, the property owner should have some say in the matter, but you have to strike the balance between one property owner being able to annex property into the city and the impact on those neighbors and the right of the neighbors to determine what's happening. And so it can't be just a unilateral property owner's area. I realize we're at our 2:15 period, and so I guess I'm going to ask, would you like to, I can certainly stop now, because those are the key areas of our area, suggestions, and take any questions you might have, and then we'd be more than happy to come back at another hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Sulem. I appreciate your tolerance of our going over a bit. This, as was noted, is a contentious issue, and in the spirit of knowing that we do not have to be contentious people about it, I am going to just throw this idea out again that we have both parties back, and we will use the time to allow the townships to summarize their presentation, take questions. We don't have any requests now, but I trust the time has somewhat stifled that, and hopefully have a good in-depth discussion about whatever questions you have. You can submit them to Mary Cummins or directly to the association of your choosing, and or if you feel that you need to bring them up at the next meeting, whatever comes to mind, whatever avenue you choose would be fine. But